In our previous shiur, we had it. Today's shiur is Masechet Sukkah Davav. We will begin on Daf Hey Amar Beis, seven lines from the bottom. The Gemara at the end of our previous shiur had taught us that shiurim, the different measurements, which what we were trying to determine, were relevant to how tall. What is the minimum that a sukkah has to be? That a minimum has to be at least 10 tefachim tall. The Gemara said we learned it from Halacha L'Moshe Sinai. Ask the Gemara. Shurim, is that true that the shurim are halach l'mashma sinai? The raisin who? Aren't the shurim a din da raisa? The pasuk says, when it speaks about Eretz Yisrael, the pasuk says, Eretz chitav soir gefem seimen rimayin Eretz ei shemen advash. Vam Rav Chanan teaches us, kol ha-pasuk hazeh, this entire pasuk is coming to teach us the shurim nemra, as we're going to learn now in the shir, the various fruits and produce mentioned in this pasuk are all here to teach us about shurim da halacha. And as the Rashbam explains, Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Klal Yisrael that they should observe all the mitzvahs Hashem, and he says that as Yisrael is so wonderful that they may forget chas v'shalom about doing the mitzvahs. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed the land of Eretz Yisrael with these various fruits, so that they could serve as a reminder to us to do the mitzvahs. Another pshat that I saw, that the Chazon Ish explained, that the reason Eretz Yisrael was blessed with these fruits is because Eretz Yisrael is a place that we're supposed to do mitzvahs. And since we're supposed to do mitzvah, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a way to remember to do the mitzvahs. So the Gemara now, as we're going to learn, is going to teach us the various fruits that are mentioned in this pasuk and how they are relevant to whatever mitzvah we need, or avera that we're going to need to discuss. So Chassam Sofer, in the Shas Tshuvas Chassam Sofer, Aruchayim Simen Kuf Mem, brings a question from Shlomo Kluger, that throughout halacha, there's a concept of Ruva Kekula, that if you have the majority of something, that is considered kekulai. So he asks, why when the Torah speaks about a shear, do we say that we have to have the absolute whole shear? The example that he gives is that we know that a mikveh has to have at least 40 saw of kosher water for a mikveh. And the Mishnah and Masechet Mikvos often say, mikveh shechasa kartav, mem saw chasa kartav, it's missing even a drop, it's not a valid mikveh. But why can't we apply the concept of Ruba Kekula? So Chassam Sofer says that Ruba Kekula only could be applied when we have the entire shear, and then we say that the roiv is Ruba Kekula. But if we don't start with we have a Sanhedrin, and we're taking a vote, so roiv makes it work. But if you don't, but that's the only scenario where we could have Ruba Kekula. But if we're just trying to establish a shear, there we can't say Ruba Kekula. So the first, and as the Bach continues explaining the Pasuk already describing Eretz Yisrael, says Eretz Yisrael, loisech sakoba, that there's nothing missing in Eretz Yisrael. So explains the Bach, if the Torah already said that everything you need or everything you would want is found in Eretz Yisrael, why does the Torah have to again identify and single out these fruits and produce? It must be that the Torah is trying to tell us a different limud, that the various mitzvahs are collected to these mitzvahs. So the first thing that's mentioned in the pasuk is chita, wheat. Regarding what halach is that mentioned, lebayis hamenuga, if there's a house that has in it negatzras, the Torah says that if one enters in the house, the Torah here is speaking about a bayis muzgur, a house that the kohen saw neged tzaras, and he quarantines the house for 7 days to make a final determination about the tumah tahara status of this house. Certainly, if the house was a bayis muchlet, that it was already determined that it's tamei, the halacha would be the same. So the Torah says that anybody who enters the home that has a neged tzaras on it, whether it's a person, whether it's kelim, whether it's clothing, all of them are tamei until the evening. However, if a person enters the house when he's wearing his clothing don't become tamei unless he's there for a certain amount of time. How much the time? The Tanan, as the Mishnah Masechta Nagoyim Perek Yud Gimel Mishnah Test teaches us, Hanichnas L'Bayis HaMenuga, if somebody goes into this house, the Kelvak Seifav, and he's carrying the kelim on his shoulders, the sandalav ufetaboysa biyada, he's carrying his shoes, he's carrying the rings, who vehem tamein biyad, they are automatically tamei, because as the Torah says, v'abal abayis, if you enter the house yitma. However, lovish kelim, is he wearing his clothing, the sandal baraglav, and he's wearing his shoes, v'tavoysa ba'atzbosav, and his rings are in his fingers, who tamei miyad, he indeed becomes tamei as soon as he enters the house. For as we just said, the pasuk says, "Va'abal abayis yitma." As soon as you enter the house, you become tamei. V'lahein, v'hein, the other items that he's wearing, tahirim, they remain tar ad shi'ir kedei chilas pras, until they're in the house for the amount of time it takes to eat achilas pras, the amount of a half a kikar of bread. Because the Torah says, so the fact that the Torah says doesn't mean that you have to actually eat food and then your clothing become tamei that to the degree that they have to have kibbutz, which means that you have to take them to the mikvah. You have to stay in the home the amount of time it takes ha'oichel to eat. And Chazal determined that that's the amount of food kedei achilas pras. But when we speak about pras, says the Gemara, it's pas chitin, it's wheat bread, v'loy pas se'irim, not barley bread. So Rashi explains that wheat bread is tastier than barley bread, and therefore it's eaten quicker. And that's why, explains the Tosfos Yontov, the Gemara says that the Gemara's point here is that we want to be machmer, that the Chazal said it should be a shorter amount of time, and wheat bread goes down quicker than barley bread. The Ritva disagrees. And the same thing the Gemara says, Mesiv, when you're sitting in reclined fashion, Oichabalifton, eating it with spice. So again, according to Rashi's interpretation, what the Gemara is teaching us is this is all different ways that the food, what you eat, go down quicker, and therefore the shear is a smaller shear. The Ritva actually takes a different approach. The Ritva takes the approach that wheat bread, since people eat wheat bread for enjoyment, so that takes longer to eat. And when you're eating it with relish, again, these are all different ways that people eat food that they're not rushed in their eating. And therefore, the Ritva takes the opposite approach, and the Ritva's approach is that it's a longer shear than a smaller shear. But whenever we speak about Kedei Achilas Pras, we spoke about Kedei Achilas Pras at the end of Masechta Yuma as well. So there's a big question, how much time is Kedei Achilas Pras? And we discussed many times in our shiurim that there are different shiurim, different opinions amongst the Paiskim, anywhere from 2 minutes to 9 minutes. But it's interesting to point out that that's the opinion of the Chasam Sofer. But the opinion of the Miches Chinuch is that actually Kedei Achilas Pras doesn't have a uniform shear. And whenever we speak about Kedei Achilas Pras, it depends on the food that we're eating. Some foods are eaten quicker, some foods are eaten slower. Also, the consideration is the person who's eating the food. Some people eat the food quicker, some people eat their food slower. And all of those considerations are taken into consideration in determining Kedei Achilas Pras. And this would be a very relevant question regarding a question that comes up often. People, whenever we speak about Achila, we'll speak about it in our Shir Mitzvashem as well, there's always the Shir Kedei Achilas Pras, a certain amount of food and a certain amount of time. And typically, the Mishnah Brewer already discussed this question, when people drink a coffee, they don't drink it so quickly. And it's certainly more than Kedei Achilas Pras, it's more than 2 to 9 minutes. So somebody drinks a coffee. Certainly a bracha rishona is recited, because a bracha rishona is always said before you eat or drink something. But the question is regarding the bracha achrona. Do you make a bracha achrona on coffee that took you longer than the 2 to 9 minutes to drink? And the Mishnah Berurah, because of that question, says that if a person wants to drink a coffee and not have any shaila, he should leave over a revius at the bottom of the cup and make sure that that final revius you drink b'chdei chilas pras, and then you won't have any question that you make a bayir in the fashas, you make the bayir bracha achrayna. But if we follow the opinion of Michas Chinuch, there's an entire different approach to that question. Because the Michas Chinuch says we look at the food and we look at the time it takes, the normal time, the average time it takes to consume that food. So if a coffee normally is consumed in a longer amount of time, then even if it took you that long to drink the coffee, you still maybe, according to Michas Chinuch, would have to make a bracha achrayna. The Pesach Tshuva brings a question that was asked to the Beis Halevi. He says there were two people entering the shul. One was wearing his talis and tefillin, and one was holding his talis and tefillin. And they both cannot enter the shul at the same moment. And the question was, who has kedima? Who should be let go in first? The Beis Halevi said that from the Gemara that we just learned, it seems that we have a raya that the person who's carrying the begadim is more significant than the person who's wearing the begadim. From the Mishnah we just learned, the Mishnah differentiated between somebody who's wearing the begadim, that they're considered part of him, versus somebody carrying the begadim, they're not considered part of the him. So therefore, the person who's carrying the talis tefillin is not, the talis tefillin retain their significant identity. And therefore, maybe the person who's carrying them should be let in before the person who's wearing it. On the other hand, the Pesachei Tshuva makes a counter-argument. He says the person who's wearing the talis tefillin is a person who's fulfilling a mitzvah. And we know there's a point to show kavod, to show honor and respect to somebody who's fulfilling a mitzvah. The person who's carrying the talis tefillin is not actually fulfilling a mitzvah. And maybe therefore the person who's wearing it should come in first. The next thing that was mentioned was Sa'ira, was a barley. What is barley relevant to? The Tanan, Etzim Kasaira, if you have a bone the size of a Sa'ira, of a barley, Betama B'maga, of a mace, it's Betama if you touch it, or B'masa, or if you carry it, the ain't a matam b'oil. Thomas oil, that we know a mace is matam b'oil, is only matame if you have the entire skeleton or entire skull or most of the limbs of a person. But if you don't have that much of the mace, there's going to be Thomas mago masa, as we just learned, just with a bone. But Thomas mace, you wouldn't have until Thomas oil, you wouldn't have unless you had much more. The next that's mentioned is Geffen. What is that for? Kedei revius yayin l'nazir. We know that somebody who accepts upon himself to be a nazir is not allowed to have any grapes, any wine, or any byproduct of a grape. And the question is, how much byproduct of a grape is usur? So if you have the pits or the skin or the other parts of the grape tree, so the way the shear is a revius. But of course the question is, a revius is a liquid measure. And we're talking about solids. So how do we measure solids with a liquid measure? So the way it's done is with displacement. You fill up a cup of wine and you put these different foods into the cup. And when a revius of wine is spilled out of the cup, when a revius of wine is displaced, that's how much is the shear that a nazir may not have. And the halacha is that it's measured with wine, because wine is thicker than water. And therefore, you need more of these foods to displace wine, to displace water. And that's what the Torah means with the word geffen. That's how Rashi explains it here. However, when we have a similar sugya in Masecht Erev in Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, Rashi has a much simpler explanation. He says, when the Gemara says geffen is for revius of a nazir, it means that a nazir, who as we just said is not allowed to drink wine, how much wine may a nazir not drink? He may not drink a revius wine. But Taisvis is dissatisfied with that pshat. Because as we learn all the other foods that are mentioned in this pasuk, the foods aren't here to teach us about the food itself. It's how we use this size fruit for other situations. So then to say that the word geffen is coming to teach us about wine itself, it wouldn't be consistent with the way we're explaining all the other words in the pasuk, and that's why he has a very different interpretation. Tina, why did we speak about figs? Kegroigus leitzor Shabbos. We know that one carries on Shabbos his chayiv if he carries a groigus. And the Torah is teaching us that the groigus is the amount that you carry ichayiv for hotzor Shabbos, for carrying out anything on Shabbos. Now, it's interesting. Here when we speak about a fig, we speak about a moist one. We're going to Mitzvah Shem speak about a groigris, and there it's a dried one. And the Mefarshim make the point, as Sfas Emes make the point, that that's what the Halacha L'Moshe Sinai taught us. That when it comes to Hilchas carrying on Shabbos, we use the shear of a groigris, which is dry. And there we use the shear that is moist. That's all included in what we learned is the Halacha L'Moshe Sinai. And the point is that this is the amount that is considered a significant amount, that if you carry out this amount of a food, it's considered that you did a meleches machshavas. Rimon, the next fruit that's mentioned is the pomegranate. The Tanan, the Mishnah Masechta Kelim, Perek Yud Zayin, Mishnah Aleph teaches us that one way that a keli that's tamei will always become tar is if it's broken. But the question is, at what point is the keli considered broken? So says the Mishnah, kol kli balabatim, a keli that a person uses at home, because a keli that people sell in the store, there even the smallest hole will make the keli be considered a broken keli. Because people don't use in their homes broken, people don't sell in their stores broken kelim. But in their homes, people would typically use broken kelim as long as they're still usable. They did not live in a time where they just dispose things. So the halacha is kol kli balabatim, the kelim of balabatim shurim, the shear that should be considered a whole, that it's now considered certainly broken, if it's kremoinim, if there's a mount the size of a pomegranate, because then it's no longer considered a keli. But if the whole is smaller than that, it's no longer considered a keli because it's still usable. Because if it has a small hole, it may not be usable for small items, but it could be used for bigger items. Once it has such a large hole that it's the size of a remine, will spill out, it's certainly considered broken. Of course, the Mefarshim point out that if the keli was meant to be used for even bigger items than pomegranates, then the hole, the size of a pomegranate, would not make this keli be considered a broken keli. Then the pasuk says, Eretz Zay Shemen, Eretz Shekol Shiurei Kazaisim. Eretz Yisrael, everything is considered, we always use the kazayis for the shear. And that's why, explains the Pnei Yeshua, the Torah describes the zayis differently than it described everything else. The Torah says, Eretz Zay Shemen. Why did the Torah use those words? Because it's different. Ask the Gemara, how can we explain the Pasuk that way? Can we explain the Pasuk that way? We just learned various cases with various rules where the shear is not a kazayis. They're all the various halachas that we just learned that the shear wasn't kazayis. Answers the Gemara, most of the shurim are kazaisim. Of course, there are exceptions that are not a kazayis. And moreover, says the Rishash, that when the pasuk says that when we measure with a kazayis, whenever it comes to food, to eating, typically we measure with kazayis, says the Rishash, that we measure with the kazayis, with the olives of Eretz Yisrael, which are bigger than the olives that were found in the rest of the world. And actually, I saw the same thing regarding the wine. We mentioned a moment ago that when you measure the revius of grape products, that you want to figure out by displacement how much equals the revius. So we said we put in to a cup of wine or to a bowl of wine, and we displace a revius of wine. Here too, the Mefarshim say it's Etzisroldiger wine, because Etzisroldiger wine is thicker than other wines, and therefore you need more product to displace a revius. Dvash, when the Torah speaks about dvash, which is a date, kikasevis agasa. Yom Kippurim, as we learned extensively at the end of Masechta Yuma, that the shear of eating on Yom Kippur is a kesevis. Alma, but getting back to the beginning of the shear. So we learned in yesterday's shear that the shiurim are all based on a daraisa. Here in the Halacha L'Moshe Sinai, here we see that it's a daraisa and Gemara Tisbara. And let's understand what we've learned in today's shear. Shiur miksivi, did the Torah mention the shiur? El hilchasa nenu. The Torah just mentioned all of these different fruits. And then the Torah says, Aloch l'mashma Sinai. And the Pasuk, therefore, is not to be understood that the Pasuk is coming to teach us hilchas shiurim, but rather the Chasuk is coming to teach us an asmachta, that the Torah that we have in Aloch l'mashma Sinai, that's how we know these various shiurim. But the Torah wanted to give it this Halacha L'Moshe Sinai some strength. And the way the Torah gave it that strength is by mentioning it in this pasuk that should serve as a way of seeing that this is the correct, that these are the shiurim. When we speak about shiurim, shiurim are obviously not only relevant to size. Shiurim are also relevant to age. In other words, the Halacha L'Moshe Sinai teaches us that a boy at 13 and a girl at 12 become bar and bas mitzvah. Now the question is, Halacha L'Moshe Sinai was said to Yisraelim. Halacha L'Moshe Sinai was not said to Akum. And therefore, says the Rambam, that the Shiurim are limited to Klal Yisrael. And the Rambam says, for example, that the shear that we just learned, whenever the Torah says you're not allowed to eat something, the shear is a kazayis, that was only said to Jews. A non-Jew, for example, may not eat Eva Menachai. Says the Rambam, there is no shear of a kazayis. He may not even eat a drop of a Eva Menachai. And the same thing when it comes to adulthood. According to the Chasam Sofer, if you have a non-Jewish child who violates one of the Zayin Mitzvah B'nei Noach, he doesn't have to be 12, the girl doesn't have to be 12, or the boy doesn't have to be 13. As long as he has intelligence, we see that he's an intelligent person, he's mechuyev, he will be considered that he violated that mitzvah. Because the 12 and 13 year old din doesn't apply by a non-Jew. However, there are those that disagree when it comes to the shear of kazayis. Because they say, what the Torah, when it says that the shear of achila is a kazayis, what the Torah means to say is, it's not considered that you ate if you ate less than a kazayis. So it has nothing to do with hilchas shiurim, which correctly we've been learning. Hilchas shiurim were only said to Yisraelim, not to Akum. When we say that the shear achila is a kazayis, what we're actually saying is that because if you ate less than a kazayis, it's not considered that you ate. Therefore, that halacha would apply to Jews or non-Jews equally. Chatzitzin, we also learned in our previous year, the Gemara said, Shurim chatzitzin u'mechitzin halacha l'mosh m'sinai. So chatzitzin means anything that's on the body when you go to the mikveh. Ask the Gemara, how could you say, or why would you say, that chatzitzin are halacha l'mosh m'sinai? Chatzitzin deraisin enu. The halacha of chatzitzin is halacha deraisa. The ksiv, the Torah says regarding someone who has to go to the mikveh. The Torah says, V'rochetz es besaroi b'mayim. And we learn from that, from the word besaroi b'mayim, shloi dava choytzitz b'inoy l'bein ha'mayim, that there could be nothing in between him and the water. And it's important to point out that this is not, there's two separate halachas. There's one halacha that when somebody goes to the mikveh, he has to totally immerse himself in the mikveh. If he did not totally immerse himself in the mikveh, that's not considered a valid tefillah. But now we're learning another halacha, that even if he properly immersed himself in the mikveh, it's only considered a valid tefillah if there is nothing on his body at that time. V'chios, says the Gemara, indeed, that the din of chatzitza is a din deraisa, as we just learned. So why do we learn the chatzitza's halacha l'moshe m'sinai? Answers, the Gemara, kiyosu hilchasa l'soroi. The halacha l'moshe m'sinai has come to teach us regarding his hair. If a person has one hair tied, so the knot, one hair has a very tight knot, and the water cannot obviously penetrate, there's chatzitza. Shalosh, when you have three hairs tied together, so the knot is not that tight, and the water could penetrate, and therefore it's not a chatzitza. Shtayim, when you have hair, two hairs together, any idea, I'm not sure if it is a chatzitza or not. And that's what the halacha of Moshe Mesena has come to teach us, the halacha of chatzitza, the halacha of chatzitza on the hair. Ask the Gemara, sorry, nami deraisa ninu. The halach of chatzitza on the hair is also a din deraisa, because it says, the pasuk says, v'rochetz es besari b'mayim, say, teach us the Gemara, es, comes to teach us that the part of the body, hatofel besari, which is not the body itself, is also subject to hilchas chatzitza. Mayniu, what is being referred to the sarai? So we're back to our question. The halach of chatzitza on here is also a pasuk in the Torah, and I don't need a halach l'moshe m'sinai to teach it to us. Answers the Gemara, ki asa hilchasa, that the halach l'moshe m'sinai is needed to tell us another halacha. It's needed to teach us what Rabbi Yitzchak taught us. Domer Rabbi Yitzchak, dva Torah. The halach l'moshe m'sinai, when is it considered a chatzitza? Rubai. If most of the hair is tied together, and therefore, if most of the hair strands that you have are tied together, and as the Avni Nezer explains, each hair is tied, and most of your hair is tied that way, so you have here rubai, and it's also makbir alav, a person, it bothers him, then it's chatzitza. If you have a situation, ain't a makbir alav, that it doesn't bother you, then it's ain't a chaitzitz. That's Midaraisa. However, Gozra Chatzitza Berubai, Chazal said that even if you have a Chatzitza on most of your body, even though you're not Makbid, Bishim Rubai HaMakbid. Since in a situation of Rubai HaMakbid, you're going to be, it would be a Chatzitza Deraisa, Chazal expanded and they said that even a Rubai Sh'ena Makbid is Chatzitza. And furthermore, they were Gozer, Amiyuta HaMakbid, that even if you have a Chatzitza, only not covering most of your hair or not covering most of your body, that it's a chatzitza mishum rubei hamakbid. And the halacha of rubei hamakbid is that's the halacha of chatzitza. There's a very interesting machloikus rishonim. When the Gemara here introduces the concept of makbid, does it bother you or not? So the question is, how do we look at that? Do we look at the individual or do we look at what is common? The Rambam's opinion is that it depends on every person. Every person level of makbid is different. Some people are more makbid and some people are less makbid. And the Rambam says we look at every individual individually. The Rashba disagrees. The Rashba says that we look at what is common. And if this is a chatzitza by most people, then it's a chatzitza by this person, even it doesn't bother him, and so too vice versa. Moreover, Rav Chaim Oizer in the Achiezer, the Shas Chuvs Achiezer, Chela Gimel Samalam Gimel, says that it doesn't have to be roiv. Even miut, even machtza, that your makbid has the same din as ruba hamakbid. On the other hand, let's say somebody is a woman who's not Jewish and is going to the mikveh as a geyrus, and she's carrying her baby, and the baby obviously is in her womb, that won't be considered chatzitza, because that's where the baby belongs. And therefore, that's not considered, the Hainu Revisayu, that's where the baby belongs, and therefore it's not considered a chatzitza. It's also very important to point out that even though the Gemara here is discussing what is a chatzitza midaraisa and what is a chatzitza midrabanan, it's very clear that we have to understand that when a person is going to the mikveh, the lechatchila the way the Miri makes this point, that when a person goes to the mikveh, he should make sure that he completely is, that is, that there is no chatzitz at all. What we're learning in our Gemara here is, what is the halacha b'diyeved? But of course, the lechatchila the way of going to the mikveh is with no chatzitza at all. Ask the Gemara, if we're making zeiris, ask the Gemara, v'ligzo nami amiyuta shen makbid mishimiyuta amakbid. Why don't we say that we have a situation of it's a miyut and it's not makbid, that it should still be a chatzitza because miyut amakbid. Inami mishum ruba shen makbid, or make gzera miyut shen makbid because of ruba shen makbid. Answers the Gemara, he gufa gzera, the whole halacha, midaraisa, as we said, it's only chatzitza by ruba amakbid. Any other situation is not really chatzitza. The other cases that we learned were only gzeiris. As we know, often the Gemara says that Chazal don't make a double gzeira. And the reason is because the whole basis how Chazal have a right to make a gzeira is because the Torah says, v'shmartem es mishmarti. And the Torah is teaching us, shetasu mishmeris, that we should make gzeiris l'mishmarti to protect the dinei Torah. B'loi mishmeris l'mishmeris, but not a double gzeira. And therefore, the Gemara says we only make one gzeira, not a double gzeira. Of course, the halacha remains that under certain circumstances we see throughout Shas that Chazal did seemingly make gzeira l'gzeira. And the Gemara says those were cases with kula chad gzeira. That when Chazal instituted the gzeira, it wasn't in stages. If it would be in stages, Chazal don't indeed make double gzeiras. But if it wasn't made in stages, then it's considered only one gzeira. So now we just learned that if there's any chatzitza, then it's considered, then the tefillah can't be done. So of course, if somebody's wearing a bandage or anything like that, the question is, are they considered a chatzitza or not? The Shulchan Aruch in Yoredei Simen Kuf Tzadiches Sif Yud says that if a person is wearing a bandage or anything like that, it's considered a chatzitza. Because even though currently the person doesn't care, not only does the person not care, he wants it. So therefore, since he ultimately wants it to be removed, and it's when it's the time for it to remove comes, that's why now it's considered chatzitza. So therefore, if somebody has fillings in their teeth, of course that isn't considered a chatzitza because the person intends to have those fillings there permanently. But the question is, when a person has a temporary filling and the doctor between treatments fills up the hole with a temporary filling that's easily put in and put out, but it's not so easy that if you have to go to the mikveh, what is the halacha? Is it considered a chatzitza or not? So, the Rishayos Tshuvos Chelkas Yaakov, Yoredei Simikuf Hei, says a very interesting psak. He says, when we speak about a bandage, so as we said, a band-aid, a cast, hopefully quickly, will be removed. When we have a filling in the mouth, even though it's a temporary filling, the person who has it doesn't care if it will remain there. A person doesn't want to walk around with a band-aid on his hand or any part of his body, frankly. A person doesn't want to walk around with a cast on any part of his body. And therefore, they are considered a chatzitza. But a person, even if it's a temporary filling, it doesn't bother him. And I think we could add, because what's going to happen ultimately when the temporary filling is removed? It's going to be replaced with a permanent filling. So the temporary filling and the permanent filling, and the permanent filling we just finished saying, is certainly not a chatzitza. And therefore, a temporary filling is not to be considered the same, says the Chalkas Yaakov, as a band-aid or anything else. And if a person has to go to the mikveh wearing, while they have a temporary filling, they need not be concerned about having it removed for when they go to the mikveh. The next thing we said in the previous shiur on the Afheim base, there were chatzitz, the mechitzin, were halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. And we learned regarding what halacha do we need to know that mechitzin are halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim, hadamorin, to teach us that a wall of a sukkah has to be at least 10 tefachim tall. Ask the Gemara, ha-nichal Rabbi Yehuda, because he held that the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash were made out of amos that were 5 tefachim long, and therefore the Gemara said, if we're going to use the Oren, the Kapyrus, as a proof to how tall a mechitza would be, according to Rabbi Yehuda, a mechitza wouldn't be 10 tefachim. A mechitza would be 11 and a half tefachim, contrary to what we learned in our Mishnah. And therefore, because of that question, the Gemara says, no, the halacha of chatzitza, the halacha of the yud tefachim, is learned from a halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. So now, according to that, it's very, our Gemara is actually very understandable. But ask the Gemara, but according to the other opinions that learned the halacha of the mechitza being 10 tefachim tall from the Oren LeKaparis, Rameya, what do we need, what is meant when we say that the mechitza is 10 tefachim? Mayik Lameimah answers the Gemara, Ki Asa Lameimah, according to Rameya, the halacha is going to come to teach us the halacha of Goyd. We learned in our previous year the halacha comes up in other places in Chas, and that is the halacha of good asik. Actually, there are two variations of that halacha. There's halacha of good asik, and good achis. Good asik takes something that's on the a wall on the floor and extends it all the way up. And good achas takes a wall that doesn't actually reach the floor and extends it all the way down to the floor. The next halacha is lavad, which we often have the halacha of lavad, that the halacha is that when you have an area of less than 3 tefachim, it's considered filled. And the next is another halacha that we learned in our previous year at a mitzvah shem. We'll learn about extensively in this mesechta, and that's the halacha of doifin akuma. Doifin akuma means that if you have kosher schach on your sukkah, and then you have a wall, then you have non-kosher schach separating the schach and the wall, if it's less than dalar amis of such a situation, doifin akuma, it bends the wall till that schach, and now you have a kosher sukkah with walls around it. And all of these are rules about walls, and all of them are rules regarding, based around mechitzas. So this is what the halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim, everybody says, teaches us when we speak about hilchos mechitza. We learned that a sukkah that doesn't have 3 walls, shein lo defanes, we learned in our Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta, such a sukkah is possible. Tana rabbanan. So it says the Gemara, what is the minimum construction of a sukkah? It says the Gemara, Tana rabbanan, shtayim kochosam, you have to have 2 proper walls, Vishlishis, and the third wall is a filo tefach. Even if it's just a tefach, that, according to the Chachamim, is considered a valid sukkah. Rav Shimon disagrees. He says, Sholosh Kulchosam, that you have to have 3 full walls, revius, but the fourth wall could be even a tefach. The Torah, when it speaks about the mitzvah of sitting in a sukkah on sukkahs, says, the sukkahs teish v'shivas yomim, ko ezrich b'Yisrael yeshu b'sukkahs, L'man yedu darasechem, ki besukkos hashavti es b'nei Yisrael meretz Mitzrayim. So if we look at the word sukkos in this pasuk, which we just said, the Torah uses the word sukkos, as we just read the pasuk, 3 times, so all pronounced the same way. But if we look in the Chumash, the way they're written, the first 2 times that the word sukkos is written, it's written chaser, only 1 vav, at the beginning of the word, not at the end of the word. The third time the Torah uses the word sukkos, it's written mole, and there's a vav at the beginning of the word, and there's a vav at the end of the word. Now, whenever we have a situation between the way the word is written and the way the word is pronounced. That is called Yesh Eim L'Mesiris. Do we follow the way it's written, or Yesh Eim L'Mekra, or do we look at the way it's pronounced? And often in Shas, we have Machloikis. Do we say Yesh Eim L'Mikra or Yesh Eim L'Mesiris? Which is primary, the way it's written or the way it's pronounced? So the Gemara says, the Gemara wants to suggest that this Machloikis, what is considered primary, the way it's written, the way it's pronounced, is directly related to the question that we're discussing, what are the minimum amount of walls to the Sukkah? So before we delve into the Gemara, the Rif was asked, when we want to discuss this Shaila, what is primary, the way it's written or the way it's pronounced, why is it said Yesh Eim L'Mikra or Yesh Eim L'Mesiris? Why don't we say Yesh Av L'Mikra or Yesh Av L'Mesiris? So the Rif answered that when we're speaking in a halachic issue that applies not to the subject that we're discussing, but it applies to other subjects in halacha, then we use the word av. But when we're speaking in halacha about a subject that applies to what we are actually learning about now, then we use the word ye'aim. So, for example, in our case, we're trying to understand how to apply the words of Mikra, how to apply the spelling and the pronunciation of the word sukkahs to the way the sukkah should be constructed. So it's words by sukkah relevant to how to understand the sukkah's construction. And that's why the word aim is more appropriate than Mesira. It's also very important to point out that even though the Gemara now, as in other places in Shas, is going to discuss Yesh Eim L'Mikra, Yesh Eim L'Mesiris, which is primary, the way it's written or the way it's pronounced, that's not to mean that each opinion says that the other way is disregarded. Of course, there's importance to follow the Mesira, the way it's written, that comes to teach us. Of course, the Mikra, the way it's pronounced, is important. What's meant to be taught in this Gemara is when there's a conflict, when the two approaches contradict each other, the question is which is primary, and that's the machloikis of Yesh Eim L'Mikra of Yesh Eim L'Mesiris. And that's what the Gemara explains. But my kamefki, what is the machloikis? Rabban and Savri, Yesh Eim L'Mesiris. We follow the way it's written. Rabbi Shimon Savri, Yesh Eim L'Mikra, we follow the way it's pronounced. And explains the Gemara. Rabban and Savri, Yesh Eim L'Mesiris. So as we said, Besukkos, the Torah writes the word Sukkos the first two times, Chaser, without the extra Vav. Besukkos the third time, it has it with the Vav. So we're following it that way. So we'll learn this way. So each time where it's said without the Vav, it's considered like one. And when the Torah says it Mole, it's considered like two, Lashon Rabbim. So we have sukkahs, each one chaser, so that will be two. Then we'll have sukkahs mole, so it gives us four. Harekan arbus, we have a total of four. Dal chad legufe, we need one to teach us the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah on sukkahs. And can't come to teach us how many walls you need. Pashtla tlosa, so we started with four, and we used one to teach us the basic halacha of sitting in the sukkah. We're down to three. So we say, shtayim kol chasam, you have to have two full-fledged walls. V'asa hachasa, and then the aloch l'moshe m'sinei comes v'garta l'shlishis, takes the third wall and says it doesn't have to be a full-fledged wall. A tefach is enough. Rav Shimon says, yesh eim l'mikra. We follow the pronunciation. So if we follow the pronunciation, so even though the first two times the Torah says besukkos, they're chasar, and the third time the Torah says besukkos, it's molei, Besukkos, it's considered harei kan shesh, as if it's mentioned six times. Again, dal chad kral gufei, take out one, so take out the whole first pasuk, so we're down to four. If we're down to four, pashlu arba, because we started with six, but we took out the whole first time, and it's very interesting. The Ritva points out that here the Gemara says, dal chad kral gufei. Previously, the Gemara said, dal chad l'gufei, because says the Ritva, that if we're taking this approach, the entire Pasuk is removed. And therefore, it's the whole pasuk is removed, not just one mention of it. So we're left with four walls. And therefore we learn, Shalosh Kol Chason, you have to have three full-fledged wall. And also Hilchason, the Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, comes to teach us, V'garus L'Rvius, that the fourth wall, Ukmasa Tefach, a Tefach is enough. V'bay Seima, another way, says the Gemara, that we could suggest explaining the machloikus of the Rabbanan and Rav Shimon, what is the minimum built of a sukkah, the Kul Alma Yesh Eim L'Mikra. We follow the pronunciation. So therefore, it's as if the Torah said six times sukkahs. We take out the first one to teach us the halach of sitting in the sukkah, and now we're down to four. V'achba'akmafki. Now, what is the machloikus? Masav, the Chacham say, we need sichra b'ikra. We need a pasuk that the sukkah, to be considered a valid sukkah, has to have schach. So therefore, one sukkah is used up, so we're down to three. And then the Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai takes the third wall and says a tefach is enough. Or Masover, whereas Rav Shimon's holds that Sichalai Boy Kro, the pasuk, we don't need a pasuk to teach us that the sukkah has to be made out of schach. That the schach is obvious that it has to have schach. So I saw Duran asks, of course, why would I need a pasuk to tell me that a sukkah needs schach? We began the Masechta by saying that schach is what the sukkah is all about. So why would I need a pasuk to teach schach? So Rand says the Gemara doesn't mean to say that the pasuk is teaching us that you need to have schach. Of course, you can't have a sukkah without schach. What the Gemara means to say is all the halachas about schach, one of the halachas that we've mentioned previous shiurim, the halach of Tassav Leimanasi. V'bayisayim, another way of explaining the machlokes is the kulama yesh eimel mesoyrus. Everybody says we follow the way it's written. If that would be the case, then we would have, everybody ought to agree that two walls and a tefach is enough. The halach l'mosh m'sinai tells us that the third wall doesn't need to be a full-fledged wall, say the Rabbanan. A tefach for that third wall is adequate. Or Masav and Reb Shimon hold that the Torah is teaching us that you have to have three full walls, and then you have to have besides the three full walls another wall with a tefach. V'bayi Seima, the Kulam, everybody agrees. The Torah is teaching us that the last wall, the Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, teaches us a tefach is adequate, and everybody agrees. Eim L'Mesoyrus, we follow the way it's written. V'ocha, b'darshin t'chilas k'mefki. The machlokes between the Chacham and Shimon is the first time the Torah says the word sukkahs. Can it be used for other purposes or not? Masava, Reb Shimon's opinion is, darshin t'chilas. Even though the Torah, we need the sukkahs to teach us that you have to sit in a sukkah, the basic halach of the mitzvah, which doesn't prevent us from also using it, says Reb Shimon, to teach us about how many walls you have. So if I use the first sukkahs, the first time the Torah used the word sukkahs for that purpose, so I have four walls, because the Torah said sukkahs four times, and we say yesh eim l'mesoyrus. And the Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai takes the last wall and says that the last wall, a tefach, is enough. Well, Masover, whereas the Chum say, ain't darshan t'chila. The pasuk that we use to teach us the actual halacha of sukkah, we can't use for another purpose. So that pasuk, that mention is already, so to speak, taken. And we're only left with three walls. And then the Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai takes the last wall and says that a tefach is enough. Ramasna has a different way of explaining the opinion of Shimon that you need to have three walls and then only a tefach. Tamar Shimon Mahocha. The pasuk says in Yeshaya, the sukkah teal itzel yom chayiv. The purpose of a sukkah is to be for a shade from the heat. Ulamachsa ulamista, the place to take shelter mizar mimata, from the rain. So the pasuk is teaching us that a sukkah has to be a place that's completely enclosed and protects you adequately. And the Shiari Karbin asks that don't we have a klal in Shas? The Ein Lamedim Divrei Torah Medivrei Kabbalah. How can we learn from a pasuk in Yeshaya to teach us how the sukkah, which is discussed in the Torah Shemiksav and the Chumash, should be built? So explains the Shiari Karbin, the pasuk is not being used to teach us Hilchas Sukkah. The pasuk is being used to tell us what is the purpose of a sukkah. Once we see from that pasuk in Yeshaya what is the purpose of a sukkah, we understand, says Rav Shimon, that that's the way the Torah means, that's what the Torah means with sukkahs. Another pshat that I saw from the Aral Chaner is that two other pshatim. One pshat that he suggests is that it's indeed Allah l'mosh Sinai. That was the Allah l'mosh Sinai according to Shimon, three walls and the fourth wall of Tefach. But Yeshaya came along to support the Allah l'mosh Sinai and put down this pasuk in Navi. Another pshat is that the pasuk in Yeshaya comes to teach us, we've been discussing in our shir, how to understand the Allah l'mosh Sinai. There were so many ways how to understand the Allah l'mosh Sinai. Now, how to understand the psukim with Yeshem l'mikra and Yeshem l'mesiris. This pasuk in Yeshaya is here to help us learn the proper way of interpreting the psukim of a sukkahs, basukkahs, basukkahs.